This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Now, last week, Splinter in the Grass announced it was cancelling this year's festival just a week after tickets went on sale. The long-running camping festival was set to return to the North Byron Parklands in New South Wales in July, headlined by Kylie Minogue, Future and Arcade Fire. Splinter said that unexpected events were to blame and will be taking a year off while conspicuously not committing to returning to 2025. Associate Professor Robert Gill from the School of Social Sciences, Media, Film and Education at Swinburne University joins us this afternoon to chat about it. Robert, welcome to Joy Drive.
Thank you.
Splinter organisers have been conspicuous in saying very little actually than what they've already said. So what do you think led to this decision?
Oh, look, I can only speculate, of course, like everybody else, but my understanding is that ticket sales didn't get up to the level that they were needed. And when you look at the life cycle of a big music event like this, then it's very different to what a normal business, particularly business revenue life cycle looks like. So a lot of the expenditure comes out at the beginning, the front end, and a lot of money gets spent even before ticket sales go on sale. And so if the ticket sales themselves don't reach a certain level, then obviously the promoters and the financiers are left with a big hole, and sometimes that hole can be just too big to fill. And so it seems to me that Splinter in the Grass may have fallen into this situation and pulled the pin.
It's really quite interesting because they sort of track the sales within a week, and if it hasn't hit, I'm guessing, a point where they're sort of comfortable, then they decide to make the decision that they have. So it's a kind of a very quick turnaround to sort of see how it's tracking. Obviously, they're keeping an eye on social media and what else is coming out of that, and then the decision was made for it to sort of be pulled. Do you think this multi-genre festivals like this are failing to attract ticket buyers because is to do with there are just too many choices or the cost of living strains? What do you think is the reason that it's not pulling as many people to sort of buy the tickets as it used to?
Yeah, it's an interesting question in that, festivals, particularly music festivals, are quite cyclic anyway. And if we look over history, we can think back to Woodstock and Glastonbury, and we had our own Sunbury here in Australia that were huge generators of interest in that kind of multi-day evening festival, which Splinter in the Grass is that kind of genre. Mm. But, that has a life cycle on it, and it's all new and exciting for a period of time, and then gradually that kind of wears off, just like a TV show that becomes very popular and then starts to lose its audience. So that could be one of the reasons. Another reason, obviously, is that our young adolescents, our big festival goers kind of demographic, they're struggling with cost of living at the moment, like most of us are, but particularly the younger generation, casualised workforce. They're finding it a bit tough. And I understand from what I have read that, production costs for these events have gone up 30-40%. Some of that's to do with post-COVID, some of it's to do with a weakening dollar, and some of it's to do with increasing insurance rates. So combined together, that makes for a bigger cost on the ticket. And, there are people around nowadays that will balk at spending hundreds, if not up to $1,000, to go to a three-day festival.
It is concerning because the more I sort of researched into what we're going to be chatting about this afternoon, I also sort of found out that Grooving the Moo, also last month, it's one of the Australia's longest running festivals cancel their festival due to insufficient ticket sales. So it is not only Splendor that's experiencing this, but there are other festivals that are also reviewing what they're achieving with sales and then realizing, well, the costs, like you mentioned, whether it's insurance or other host of costs that we're not aware of to do with production, are so vast that they're sort of reaching the point that they've got to make a decision before it gets too long and too late in the game. And people then are making their sort of commitments to sort of be there, and they've got to pull it at that point and probably have a lot more noses out of joint than they did if they did it like they have with a week after the sales were announced.
Yeah, look, it is a brave decision so early, but obviously their actuaries know what they're putting together in terms of revenue generation and what the potential is for revenue coming in at certain periods of the event life cycle, and they must have a pretty strong idea about if we're not hitting targets here at this amount, then we're never going to hit them, and therefore the event itself will probably run a loss. So I would imagine that would be one of the main reasons. But if we could explore, you know, some of the other reasons too, and if you look at things like what the mood is in the entertainment field at the moment, and the fact that in Australia we've had a number of big acts come out from America particularly. And, you know, these are your one-night concerts, your three-hour, four-hour concerts that are tickets can be anywhere between, you know, 200 up to VIP tickets, which are up near the 1,000. But, you know, if you can go to a concert for $200, you are going to a known entertainer, you know their songs, you know the kind of entertainment and the level of entertainment you're going to get for that kind of money, and it takes a few hours out of your life, but only takes a couple of $100, then that could be quite appealing to the festival goers at the moment, in terms of, well, you know, I'm saving myself maybe $600, $700, $800, and I'm getting to see somebody that I'm familiar with, and I know what kind of music I'm going to get. Whereas some of these festivals now, because of the COVID situation and the increasing costs, the genre for the festival is becoming broader. And therefore, some of the acts that are included on the festival lineup can be quite far and away from what the original kind of genre was for the festival. And so people are going and they're looking at some mid to low popular range entertainers and groups, and sort of saying, well, not sure if I'm going to like that music. And, you know, am I willing to sit through 3, 4, 5 hours of that kind of music before I get to something that I really like? So that could be a determinant too.
I'm chatting with Associate Professor Robert Gill, School of Sciences, School of Social Sciences, Media, Film and Education at Swinburne Uni, and asking the question if music festivals are on the way out following last week's news of Splendor in the Grass being cancelled. Now, Rob, I was going to ask you the question, is it sort of, do you think there is a, I mean, we always turn to federal, state governments to sort of see what support is provided for funding and reinvesting in the arts, particularly festivals and live music. Is there any sort of comment that's coming out or any chatter about they should be sort of looking at what they could do to support this? Or is it just purely a business decision? At the end of the day, it's not pulling in the people that it would like to, and government coming in and supporting these things is probably money that isn't as thoughtfully invested as it could be elsewhere.
Yeah, it's interesting that when certain entrepreneurial businesses start to fail, that we can shift our focus away from the actual the business itself and start looking at government and saying, you know, where's the government support?
Yes.
But, you know, to be fair to the government, they are fairly generous typically with any sort of festivals or musical events, because they know the community engagement that it can generate, but also it can reflect really well on the government. You know, so if something's rather successful and people enjoy it, and it's happening in your local council area or maybe at a state level, then it's a good reflection for the government. So the government's pretty typically are good supporters of these types of events. And even if they're not going to be, seed funding some of these events, they will often supply a significant amount of human resource in terms of, being able to support the promoters or the entrepreneurs in terms of having to get their paperwork in order and some pretty savvy advice around event planning, particularly for certain areas. So I'm not 100% sure that the government can really be a quick fix for what's going on in the industry at the moment.
I agree. I suppose the last thing I want to sort of mention is, regardless of how messy and sweaty these festivals can be, do you think that rite of passage for young people will be forever changed with, in light of what you've mentioned, where they seek a preference for the sure thing headline show like the ones we've had in the past few months have been touring Australia? What does it mean for our youth who sort of are the kind of mainstay of these festivals, who sort of enjoy what they do, and it's kind of a rite of passage? Do you think that's forever going to be changed now?
Well, being a parent of teenage adolescent kids, I can probably say some of it is a bit of a sigh of relief. But
yes.
To be fair to them, as I said, this kind of cycle of enjoying music has been going on in Australia for 50, 60 years. And, what becomes popular and what becomes the flavour of how people will enjoy their music, I think does go through a cycle. So if we look back over Australian history, we had the big festivals in the 70s. In the 80s, we had that more kind of intimate pub rock kind of approach. And then the 90s and 2000s, we had the big shows that came out. Festivals got popular again in the 2000s and the 2010s. And maybe it's just that process of that cycle that we're going through, that people come up with new ideas, bright ideas around what will make good entertainment. And when that comes on board and people start to enjoy that approach, then they shift away from the older approaches. So I wouldn't say that festivals are never going to be around again or as strong as what they are. But just at the moment with revenue and cost of living pressures, maybe there's more safer bets. There's less riskier bets for the industry to take at the moment.
All right, so let's just watch this space and just see. Maybe there's a natural cycle to do with the economy that may sort of bring it back into the front of mind rather than the back of mind. Robert, all I can say is thanks for joining us on Joy Drive.
All right, pleasure.
That's Robert Gill, Associate Professor from the School of Social Sciences, Media, Film and Education at Swinburne Uni.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.